Hi there, Craig Wilkinson, and this is Dangerous But Good. I'm going to be talking today about a series that everyone is talking about, the series Adolescence, British series, tragic, grueling, gritty. It's not a documentary. It's a fictional depiction, but a very sad and tough story, which I think needs a lot of commentary. People around the world are talking about it. It's even been raised in British Parliament. I think Starmer, the British PM, is talking about getting it into all schools. It's a very profoundly difficult thing to watch. It's picked up a lot of criticism from the extreme right and a lot of commentary from the extreme left. On the one side, people saying that this is just a lot of nonsense. It's, you know, on the other side, on the left, people saying, blaming masculinity, toxic masculinity. Here's the reality. Neither of those perspectives are correct. Both of them are extreme. Both of them are ideologically driven and incorrect. Essentially, the story is about a young British schoolboy, 13-year-old, who stabs to death a female classmate. He's rebuffed and rejected by her. He becomes obsessed, and he eventually stabs her to death, kills her. Absolute tragedy. Absolute tragedy. Everyone loses. The young girl is killed. Her life ended prematurely. She's probably the ultimate victim. The young boy will spend the rest of his life in jail. Also, tremendously sad outcome. The father and the parents of both children, devastating. The school's devastated. Society, it's an indictment on society. And to truly analyze this, we got to really find out what is the truth here? What actually happened? Remember, this is fictional. Emphasize, not a documentary. It didn't actually happen. But in many ways, it does depict some very real issues that are taking place in society, very real, which need commentary and need analysis. And if you're on either side of the ideological divide, whether it's extreme right, extreme left, open your minds and listen. And let's examine why this kind of thing could happen. Because it's real. The kind of state that the young boy was in, the kind of action he took, you know, this could quite well happen. And there are incidences similar to this happening around the world. But to really truly understand, we got to delve into why. Remember, when we look at reasons for terrible things happening, we got to distinguish between the concept of a reason and the concept of an excuse. A reason is not an excuse. You take gender-based violence in our nation, South Africa, for example. There's no excuse. There's never an excuse ever for a man to abuse a woman or a woman to abuse a man or to be violent or in any way. But there are reasons. And unless we understand the reasons, we will never be able to fix the problem. Let's start from the standpoint here, the point that humanity is an absolutely beautiful thing. Men and women, beautiful. As mankind, we are created in the image of God. And there's the divinity in all of us, in men and in women. And so we can never start from the standpoint of saying that masculinity is toxic. It's not. Masculinity is a beautiful manifestation of humanity, of the divine, as is femininity. So let's just get away from the perspective and saying that men are toxic and masculinity is toxic. And, you know, when a young boy stabs to death a young woman, it's because masculinity is bad. Absolutely not. Masculinity in its pure form is a beautiful gift to humanity, as is femininity, the masculine and feminine working together, co-create this world. I had the privilege and joy of attending with my wife the other night a Andrea Bocelli concert. It was absolutely magnificent. And he had brought onto stage a couple of female singers. And here you had this incredible, one of the best ever male soprano voices singing. I mean, just goosebump stuff. And next to him, the female equivalent singing in this magnificent feminine voice. And this beautiful dance, this beautiful interweaving, this beautiful synergy and symbiosis between the masculine and the feminine on stage was absolutely awe-inspiring. Magnificent. The male, the depth, the female, the tone and the range, working together, weaving together, the duet, absolutely fantastic. And it's such a beautiful depiction of life. Men and women are different, beautifully different. The drivers of the masculine soul, the drivers of the feminine soul, masculinity, femininity, absolutely magnificent. Each of them representing some of the divine. Different. of equal value, worthy of equal opportunity. And dancing together, we just create a beautiful world. So we must never get to the place where there's a war, where there's a polarization, where masculinity versus femininity, where there's this war of attrition. Absolutely the wrong way to go. So let's get back to this story of adolescence. 13-year-old boy stabs to death 13-year-old girl. Absolute, phenomenal, major tragedy from every perspective. Why would this happen? Why would this happen? You have, as I said, on the one ideological divide, you have people blaming masculinity. On the other side, people saying this was a falsely created depiction designed to malign masculinity. What is the truth? Why would this happen? Let's be honest, there's a lot of this kind of thing happening. There's gender-based violence happens all the time, men beating up women. There's also men being abused by women in a different way. Remember, the vast majority of abuse that happens by men on women is physical and sexual and brutal in nature. The vast majority of abuse that happens from the female perspective towards the male is not physical, sexual. It's psychological and verbal. Now, we won't get into discussion as to which is which and which is worse. It happens. And the fact that a young boy physically killed a young girl is devastatingly evil, awful. Why would he do that? Why would he be driven to that? Let's start from the standpoint. No boy is born an abuser. No boy is born a misogynist. No boy is born a racist. No boy is born with a desire to take other lives and to abuse other lives. No. Masculinity, boys are born with an innate desire to protect, to use their strength to protect and to create an environment of safety. And that's the masculine mandate, to provide safety, using his physical strength, whatever other strength it has, to provide safety. Something goes wrong on the journey of boy to man for a young boy, teenage boy, to kill a girl. Something goes horribly wrong on the journey from young boy to adult man, for a man to physically or sexually abuse a woman. It is not masculinity. It's distorted masculinity. Is masculinity gone horribly wrong? So let's look at what can possibly go wrong. Because unless we understand what goes wrong with the pure, the beautiful, the divine, the masculine, the divine masculinity, which is there for a powerfully good purpose, unless we understand what goes wrong with that, we can never begin to fix it. If we malign masculinity, if we accuse men of being toxic, if we say masculinity is trash and negative and we need to redefine it, we're missing the boat. We're not getting to the point of the fact that this is distorted masculinity. This is masculinity that's wounded. So what goes wrong? If you look at the journey of a young boy to adulthood and adolescence, there are many factors at play. Let's look at the drivers of the masculine soul. If you look at the behavior of a young boy and a young girl, pre-adolescence, there's a difference. There's a big difference. Boys don't naturally sit still. Boys are bombastic. Boys want to expend energy. If you take a playroom situation, playground situation, pre-adolescent, preschool, take a boy and take a girl, they behave differently in the playground. The kind of games that boys play are different to the kind of games that girls play. Boys want to get out there and expend energy. They want to roughhouse. They want to play. They want to use their energy. There's testosterone that's creeping into their veins. There's a desire to be rough. And unless we allow boys the ability to do that, we're going to squash them. Why do you think there's so many boys suffering from ADD, so many more boys on Ritalin? It's because we're trying to suppress what boys are designed by nature to do. In the heart of every boy is this very deep question. And the question is, do I have what it takes? You see, if you look at boys and girls, you look at humans coming into this world, there are three fundamental questions that we ask. There are three fundamental needs that we have. The one is the need for a sense of belonging. What is my tribe? Where do I belong? What is my place in this world? The second is the question of identity. Who am I? What is my unique identity as an individual in this world? And the third, very important one, is a sense of validity, a sense of legitimacy. Do I matter? Am I worthy? Does my life count? Legitimacy. And that's where we get this tremendous sense of imposter syndrome in many adults as they grow older, both men and women. Am I legitimate? And the answer is, to them is, no, I'm not. And therefore, I feel like an imposter in this world. So take this young boy growing up. He needs to have a sense of belonging. He needs to have a sense of identity, and he needs to have a sense of validity. Now, in this adolescent series, we find that this young boy believed he was ugly. He was told by his peers, and for whatever the source of what, he didn't believe that he was worthy. He didn't believe that he was legitimate. He believed he was ugly. He was also classified as an incel. Now, an incel is someone who's, it's a group of men out there, it's a real thing, who believe that they will never have sex. They're involuntarily celibate. He was classified as that. So here he is. He's growing up, and he's got this question on his heart. And the question is, do I have what it takes? Am I valid? Am I the real thing? Is my life worthy? Do I have something of value to bring the world, and am I competent? This is the cry on his heart. And the question that he's been given, the answer he's been given to that question is, you're ugly and you'll never have sex, you'll never have a woman. Now, just bear in mind, this is the context in which he's growing up. And so for his young developing heart and soul and psyche, he doesn't have a sense of belonging. He doesn't have a sense of identity. Well, his identity is I'm ugly. And he doesn't have a sense of legitimacy. He believes that I'm illegitimate. I don't have what it takes. So I'm an outsider, and I'm an outcast. Now, you look at the factors that influence his life growing up. And for me, there are four very key factors in influencing the life of any young child, boy or girl, growing up. His father, his mother, society, and his peers. Now, let's look at the father. You know, the father's role in a boy's life is to model positive masculinity. The father's role is to be present and engaged. The father's role is to provide discipline and boundaries. The father's role is to truly see and get and engage with and understand his son, and to help his son discover his identity and then mentor him into positive, healthy adult male. Now, this father in this particular series was actually a decent man. He thought he was doing the right thing. But if you look at his response to his son and his engagement in his son, he had no idea of the kind of world in which his son was living. He thought if the son is at home, he's safe. If the son is behind closed doors in his bedroom, on his computer, he's safe. You know, I'm doing my job as a father. He didn't realize that the world that his son was engaging in behind those closed doors via his computer was a very dangerous world. He was engaging in a world that exposed him to so many different influences. So the father was not present, engaged in his son's emotional, psychological life, in the world that his son operated in. And so this father, perhaps, and later on in the series, you see a tragic scene where the father's weeping, and acknowledging to his son he failed him, he could have done better. Now, you've got to look at this father with tremendous sympathy. He thought he was doing the right thing. He thought he was there, and his heart and his intention was probably correct. But fathers need to engage fully in their sons' lives. Young boys look to older men to validate them, to teach them masculinity, to discipline them, to model to them what it means to be a good man. And in the absence of that, where do young boys look to? They look to their peers. They look to the media. They look to all kinds of wrong places. So number one factor in growing a young boy into a good man is the presence of his father, the modeling of his father, the disciplining of his father, and the teaching of his father. So there we see one thing that already had started going wrong in this young boy's life. Second most important person in a boy's life is the mother. Well, I'd say equally important, but she's the most important woman in his life. And mom's role is to nurture, to love, to protect, to teach, and to model to the young boy what positive, powerful femininity is, to model to him what's acceptable behavior for a woman, from a man, where to set boundaries, to nurture and to protect. Where moms can often go wrong is by overprotecting, by mollycoddling, by not giving the son permission to get out there and try things and to experiment and to fail. So the mom can fail to provide the son with the confidence and the permission to get out there and be wild and to be what men are supposed to be. Wild, but in a controlled fashion. Aggressive, but in a very controlled fashion. Aggressive only to what is bad. Competitive, but in a very positive fashion. So moms play a massive role. Then look at society. the kind of messaging that society gives young boys is absolutely crucial, and young girls. You know, we're talking about this young boy, though, his development, his growth into an adolescent that went horribly wrong. And here, let's spend a bit of time on this, because the kind of messaging that society gives boys is often very toxic and often very, very negative and destructive. Firstly, access to pornography has become the norm. So many young boys, their sex education is pornography. What an incredibly distorted, tragically broken way of learning about sex through pornography. Pornography depicts sex as just simply something that you do for pastime, for recreation, something that every woman is giving every man, something that's just transactional. There's no intimacy involved, something that can be sometimes quite violent, something that's just, there has no boundaries. And this is put out there by media, and it's become virtually socially acceptable. I mean, governments allow it. It's an absolutely legitimate way for people to make money, to produce pornography. And it's become absolutely an epidemic of men becoming addicted to pornography, and increasingly women as well. And it's such a distortion, it's such a tragedy, it's such an abuse of women and abuse of men, and just an abuse of what should be a beautiful, sacred, intimate interaction between a man and a woman in a committed relationship. So he's probably accessing pornography and just seeing wild, unfettered, no boundaries sex, which means nothing other than having fun and two people using each other for fun. So that's his sex education. Second, he's getting the message from media that, and for me, I call these the four big lies about masculinity: sex, power, money, and big boys don't cry. And this is the kind of message that to be a man, the more sexual partners I have, the more of a man I am. And so I can define my manhood by how successful I am in coercing or seducing or getting women to have sex with me. That becomes a standard for my masculinity, according to media, according to pornography, according to so many movies we watch. Man, boy meets girl, they have a date, and pretty soon they're in bed, and that's a success. What a distortion. Number two, power. The sense that men, to be a man, I have to have power. I have to be dominant. I have to have either physical power or mental power or economic power, or, you know, I have the power to attract the opposite sex. Money. Money's depicted as, you know, money makes it all. The more the car I drive, the clothes I wear, that's what makes me a man. And then the next big lie is big boys don't cry, you know, and we see that, you know, this young man is unable to share his challenges, his sadnesses here, the things that are, he's unable to share them because big boys don't do that. Boys, men don't do that. We don't share our vulnerabilities. We don't talk. So society playing a massive role in shaping this young boy's life. Remember, I said earlier that a sense of belonging is so crucial. So here you have this boy who believes he's ugly, who believes that he's an incel, involuntary celibate. So where is he drawn? He's drawn to a subculture of men who are incels, who are part of the manosphere, who are part of this group of men who feel rejected by society. He's drawn to that group because at least there he has a sense of belonging. He has a sense of legitimacy. He has the ability to say, well, this is not my fault. This is the fault of society, a woman. They're rejecting me. So I have to belong to this marginalized group of people. And he finds solace and he probably finds comfort in that group. He's drawn to groups which promote a negative, toxic kind of masculinity, because that's where he feels he needs to go to belong. Because society, parents, father, mother, is not validating. They're not validating him as a boy and saying, you know, as a boy, as a young boy becoming a man, growing into adolescence, your life matters. Masculinity is good. Who you are is enough. You're not ugly. You're not a reject. You have a tremendous amount of value to offer the world. He's not receiving this kind of validation from all the powerful forces in his life, mother, father, society. And so he's drawn into this kind of subculture of toxicity. The fourth big influence on us growing up is our peers. Now, what is he receiving from his peers? And here we jump to this young girl and other young girls in his life who we find out were cyberbullying him. They were teasing him. They were telling him, you're ugly. You're not worth it. You're never going to get a date. And more he faced the ridicule of being rejected by members of the opposite sex, being called ugly, actually beginning to believe that he will never make it. He's destined to be celibate for the rest of his life. He's destined never to have a partner. Now, you can imagine the psyche of this young boy, rejected, desolate, not feeling a sense of belonging, not feeling a sense of legitimacy, not feeling a sense of identity. Who am I? And increasingly, this builds up anger and resentment. Now, the incident that led to him stabbing was where he was once again rejected and rebuffed. Now, I got to emphasize, there's no excuse. What he did was absolutely inexcusable. It was destructive, terrible, inexcusable. And yet, let's look at the reasons. Angry young man. There comes a point in life, and psychologists will confirm this, that where the acceptance of your peers is more important to a young adolescent than life itself. The need to be accepted, the need to be validated, the need to belong to a group. And so all of these things are swirling inside this young boy's psyche and his head, this devastation, these negative influences, the pornography he's been watching, the influences he's getting from these marginalized, well, these subculture groups, and the increasing ridicule and rejection by peers and by members of the opposite sex. And this is what led to this explosion of anger, where this terrible, terrible incident took place. And so when we analyze what happened here and we really delve into the reasons, we got to say, well, how do we fix this in society? How do we change this narrative? And we got to say any extremes are destructive. We got to go back to who are we as human beings? We got to go back to the fact that humanity, human beings are incalculably precious, created in the image of God, men and women, absolutely beautiful, different, with different characteristics, different drivers, obviously a tremendous overlap. We have more in common than we have difference. We have to move away from polarization. We have to move away from blame. We have to move away from this war of attrition between sexes, between races, between different cultures, and come to the point of seeing ourselves as human beings, equally valuable, and bringing different things to the party. We have to move away from some of the very, very destructive narratives we have in society. We have to move back towards where humanity is sacred, where sex is sacred, where interaction between men and women is a sacred thing, where we treat each other as equally valuable human beings, where we're able to see each other for who we are and validate each other and call each other out and say, who you are as a human being is a beautiful, valuable thing. You belong first and foremost to the human race. You belong next then to whatever subgrouping you come from. A male, you're a man, and that's a beautiful thing. And to be a man, you don't have to be powerful. You don't have to be rich. You don't have to have sex with multiple partners. That's what makes a man. What makes a man is someone who stands up and takes responsibility, someone who brings his strength and all that he is to make the world a better place. We need to be able to see that and validate that. We need to be able to give every human being a sense of validity, a sense of belonging, a sense of purpose, a sense that they are legitimate, the real thing, whether they're tall or short, black or white, male or female, straight or gay. We need to be able to validate each other. Now, if we do this, and if we parent well, and if we have good male role models and good female role models, and if we abolish bullying of any kind of sort, whether it's cyberbullying, whether it's a woman bullying men with their tongues, whether it's men bullying each other with their fists, or women in the derogatory way, when we get to the point where we stop seeing women as sexual objects, but seeing them as equally valuable human beings, where we get to the point as young men valuing each other, other young men as brothers, valuing women as sisters, equal co-creators. This is when we're going to begin to eradicate this kind of thing. We are all equally valuable human beings. We must never call masculinity toxic. We must never, ever think that one group of people is superior to another. We need to raise the next generation to value themselves. We need to raise the next generation with boundaries. We need to raise the next generation with discipline. We need to mentor the next generation. We, as the older generation, also need to see the kind of world in which youngsters are growing up in. It's a world that's very different to the world in which I grew up. I raised my son and my daughter, and they were entering into the era of internet and cyberbullying and cell phone usage. And that's a world that I didn't experience growing up. And as the older generation, we need to understand that world, understand the nuances, understand the danger The danger doesn't exist outside the house. It exists inside the house. The danger exists in these devices, access to pornography, access to negative influences. And these are the kind of things we need to do to begin to stop and eliminate and prevent the tragic kind of thing that was depicted in this movie, Adolescence. So let's, in building the world into a safe and prosperous and beautiful place, let's seek the truth. Let's find the true reasons for why people do the things they do. Let's not just blame and categorize and put into boxes. Let's truly understand what drives the heart of a young man, what drives the heart of a young woman, the influences that society brings on them, the forces that are governing them. And let's begin to truly cherish the next generation and raise them to be whole and healthy men and women, adults who can work together, adults who can dance together, masculine and feminine, that can dance together to co-create a beautiful world. Let's be dangerous to the things that threaten our future. Let's be dangerous to toxic influences, whatever source they come from. And let's be fully aware of the dangers that we face, that our children face, that the next generation faces, and begin to truly take a stand against them. Because only when we do that will we eliminate these terrible things that are happening and begin to create, raise the next generation to be pure, to be whole, to be loving, to be truly human, so that we can build a great future.